This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul, John McDonald, and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And welcome to Talking of Books, and it's me, Yvette, with my co-host, Hend, and we're joined in the studio now by Tiki, whom we're going to be talking about The Empathy Problem by Gavin Extents. But first of all, tell us a little bit about you, Tiki, if you would.
Certainly. Okay. By profession, I'm a teacher. I'm an economics teacher. That's by default. What basically happened was that I was more interested in art. I've grown up in many different parts of the world, and when I was given this book, The Empathy Problem, I read the title and I wasn't very sure about what it was, and then I realized that, you know, it was something that I had also, when I started reading the book, I realized that there were lots of things in here which I had also experienced over the years. And though I was interested in art, I got a degree in business management, and I had an option of working in a bank, which I did not want to take on because I don't like banks and I don't like finance, and I was in a totally wrong profession. So I went into teaching. I loved it, though I still continued teaching economics. I loved being around younger people, and I like to see more art in younger people. I like to see more balance in younger people. So I worked in many different ways with younger generation. So now I'm in Dubai and I'm enjoying every moment of it.
And still teaching?
I gave up teaching a few years ago because of, I've had a late child, and now he is in his teens. So first I thought it'll get better and I'll have more time.
Oh,
but
no.
Now, yeah.
And so, I think Hend and I have both got children in their 20s, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, it really doesn't get any better ever.
I'm realising
that. I'm
sorry. But in my somewhat spare time, I do some voluntary work and think
and
enjoy
how you
that.
Came to the festival, I believe.
Absolutely.
As a volunteer,
I love it.
So thank you very much for that, and thank you for joining us today.
Pleasure.
And so actually you've got quite a good background for talking about a book that's set in a financial centre of London. Mm-hmm. But interesting what you were saying about the dichotomy between actually what I really want to do, which is art, and what I ended up doing, which was business management.
Mm-hmm.
Referring back to the first book we talked about today, When Breath Becomes Air.
Yes.
And again, there's a man who did English literature. That mm-hmm. was his major subject, with a bit of biology on the side, and ended up becoming a neurosurgeon. So having that balance, that renaissance feeling of being a rounded individual where you've got the arts and the sciences and all those things playing a part in your life. We have a central character in The Empathy Problem by Gavin Extents, who doesn't have a lot of art in his life, does he?
Yeah.
Would you like to introduce us to the book a little bit and tell us
Certainly. Something
of what it's about?
Yes, certainly. Well, very well said. Yes, there is not much art in his life. But having said that, the interesting thing is that his life gets changed by someone who is a musician.
Exactly.
And she's this lovely person who plays, the violin at the steps of St. Paul's, which is a beautiful setting. And this person changes his life. So though he was such a, if I may say so, full of himself.
I think that's putting it very mildly, actually.
Yes, and he just thought, he had sort of, he had everything that one would ever wish for, and it was a dreamlike life. And he was quite disdainful, and he would not pay attention to people who are not equal in his status and things. It never even occurred to him that there was a life which was not, people led lives which was not like his. And here was a man in a 30,000-pound suit and, coming out of a chauffeur-driven car in middle of central London and going to his work, till his life changes and he realizes that he has very little time left and he is terminally, he has cancer. and he probably will not be living for more than maybe 4 or 5 months. And what happens is basically this is about a movement which is called the Occupy movement, and it was the year 2011 and 12 when there was a lot of economic crisis and there was a lot of people protesting about various things, and I think people had a voice and they wanted to be heard, and this was really the 99% people, as it's quoted in the book, who thought that they were not as privileged and they wanted to raise a voice against social injustices, etc. So they had camped outside his lovely office, and he couldn't understand these people. And there's a line there where he says, what are they protesting against? You know, people studying finance and going into economics, will they be able to pay their bills if they study, say, sociology?
No. Yes, yeah, he's very anti the soft subjects as they used to be perceived, like sociology. Yeah. He's not a nice man, is he? Gabriel is not a character that you warm to. So when he discovers that he's got a brain tumour, which can have a profound effect on people's emotions, mm-hmm. on the way they behave, and it can, you know, change behaviour patterns, I did not find myself sympathetic to him in any way.
Yes,
it's a bit harsh of me, I'm sorry.
No, that's, yes, and I can think of so many people that are like that, actually, that you do come across, and you just say, you know, just relax. This is not, life is not meant to be lived like this. You need to enjoy things around you. But the sad thing is that when you are on the top like that, and you have all that money, you are basically paying for the things, and things become so important in your life that you forget about relationships. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have a very easy start in life. He lost his mother when he was very young. So this child, I mean, as a child, he was really not raised by a mother as such. His father remarried and he had a stepmother. And he didn't spend time with his father either, because there's a passage where it's a very moving conversation between him and his father. It almost brought me to tears when I read that passage, and all of a sudden things changed in my mind about him. And he basically was raised without a mom, and his father had sent him away because he couldn't have looked after him by himself. He recognizes that he is very intelligent. And he's intelligent enough to recognize that it's not just intelligence which can bring you somewhere in life. You need to put in the hard work. So he was intelligent. He had put in a lot of hard work. And he was exactly where he thought he would be happy, only to realize one day that he wasn't, and that money was not going to bring buy him time or life. He had something he was battling, and he was totally, helpless with that. Mm. So part of me did not like him, and a part of me felt bad for him and sympathetic.
And you're kinder than me. I just wholeheartedly didn't like him.
No.
So maybe what happened to his life, you know, that's what he wanted to compensate, that by money and by being powerful, because he missed the love of the family and the father.
And so loads of people. That's not exactly uncommon, is it? And not everybody turns into what he is, which is... I think I also found him not wholly credible. For example, knowing he's got, as a character, he's got to where he is. He has more millions than I have dirham coins. he has this incredible flat in central London. He works in Canary Wharf. He has his chauffeur who picks him up. He has the cleaner who goes in, I think, every day. Mm-hmm. And he's never even seen her. So his flat is always utterly immaculate. Can you detect a slight note of jealousy here?
Yeah.
But he's not a likeable person, and he's not rounded. Now I think anybody in his position, where he talks about, you know, having met cabinet ministers, and you know, he's got no qualms about meeting the top levels of society, to actually admit that he knows absolutely nothing about classical music. He doesn't know who Rachmaninoff is. He's never heard of him. I found that, with the level of education that he's apparently had, for me that was not credible. Now I sort of always think back to my own children, would they? You know, they're not classical musicians by any means, but I'd be a bit shocked if they hadn't heard of the names that he never has heard of. Mm-hmm. So he just wasn't, for me, a totally credible creation as a character, but maybe I'm being a bit harsh.
No, but you're not. I don't. No, you're not being harsh. But yeah, that is.
She means I'm being harsh. She's just terribly polite.
No, I'm just. Yeah. No, I'm just being the devil's advocate here. I think
you can see so many personalities like this. I mean. In this
think of people who've got immense power in the Western world, who, you know, have got that sort of attitude towards money.
People got to high positions, you know, when they they block themselves from other, from the emotions, from everything. It's just the power, as you say, the car, the apartment and everything. And that's mostly what's happening.
Because, you know, Yvette, if you see here, what I found very remarkable here is that we hear about his father and we hear about the person that he works with and the secretary who has to always bring him things
his
muffins and coffee, things like that. But we don't come across any friends that he's had.
No, he has no friends, does he?
No, he has no friends. So he could not have been that great a person. He was not likable then.
Definitely. I rest my case. And,
yes, because I mean, it struck me that here's somebody who has no friends at all. Yes. Like when you are really that unwell and you hear that you might die, you want to talk to somebody, but he doesn't have anybody to talk to.
No, it's not that he can't bring himself to tell anyone. It's just that they're actually, apart from his father, who he has a very broken relationship with, there is no one. So we're going to come back to the empathy problem very soon.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading. From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And here on Talking of Books, you've got me, Yvette, we've got Hendon, we've got Tiki, and we are talking about The Empathy Problem by Gavin Extents. And before we carry on with our book discussion, I'm just going to give you the chance to win a copy of The Empathy Problem. And what I would like you to do is to tell us in which city is St Paul's Cathedral. And that's the St Paul's Cathedral designed by Sir Christopher Wren, just in case there are any more scattered throughout the world. The St Paul's Cathedral that actually features in this book, in which city is it? 4001. And don't forget to tell us your name. So we have Gabriel, who is the central character here. Gabriel is a banker. He's a speciality is hedge funds, which I meant to mark the page and I didn't. There's a brilliant description of what a hedge fund is, which I will try and find actually, which is what his secretary says is how she would explain it to her children, I think, because I think a hedge fund, unless you're in that world, is something slightly mysterious. And with my very literal, slightly literary hat on, I picture a hedge fund as, you know, it's not saving to plant the surrounds to your garden at all. Nothing to do with greenery. So there we've got Gabriel. He's not a nice man. He's incredibly rich. He discovers that he has a brain tumour, that it's terminal. It affects him, his behaviour, his perceptions of the world. He takes to crying. And having said that I didn't warm to him in any way, I would admit that I did feel for him when he's crying on the tube, and that for him is a defining moment, isn't it?
Yes, it is indeed, yes. And he has no control over it. And he's, you know, he has no control over his crying, and he doesn't understand this emotion because he has been so in control and he has been so strong. And then all of a sudden, you know, he has no control over his crying and he's conscious he says, I really don't care even if people see me cry. But it was, you know, but then this whole crying episode is new to him and he can't understand, what drives him to crying. And I think it is the helplessness. It is just, you know, this total surrender to fate, knowing that as powerful as he might have thought and as fortunate he might have thought of himself, it just takes so little to just change your entire life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just takes away everything from you.
Yeah.
And life is so precious, you know, sometimes we all forget. And you need to have a life to enjoy everything else that's around you.
Mm.
And I think that is a lesson that is forgotten when you are going that high and you're so you feel you're above everything else.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden your life is just taken away like that from you. So in fact, I would like to read a passage from the book, and I'd like to see how his life starts and how he describes it, and then the conversation between him and his father, where he is somebody who had such a great ego and thought he was so great. He is asking his father if he is proud of him and if he feels bad that he is his son and for what he has achieved and done, which the father cannot understand, because he says, "Son, you've done so well, you're so rich, you've made so much money." But he says, "Yes, but am I a good person? I think I'm a bad person. I'm
so
not."
He still wants to take credit from his father.
Yes, he still wants that approval, and he thinks that he's brought shame to his dad by not. And he actually blames his, well, he should not have, but, you know, he blames his father for not encouraging him to choose a career in terms of medicine, teaching, where he says, "I would have made a difference in someone's life. This is only my life, and I have all this wealth, but what have I done for society? What am I giving back to society? I wish I had not chosen this career."
So and when did he recognize that? After he got sick? Or
yes.
After he got sick, and then he recognized that he's not doing anything to...
It
would not have happened otherwise.
No, certainly not. Certainly not, So there's a passage here. It's the name of the chapter is Driven, and it says... Yes, he'd be the first to admit that he had been born with certain advantages. He had been born with a brain for a start. He had been aware from a very young age that he was far more intelligent than most of his peers. But intelligence wasn't enough. There were lots of intelligent people in the world, and most of them weren't millionaires. Many of them didn't earn much more than his chauffeur. The point was, it took more than brains to get ahead in life. It took focus and ambition. And then is the same person who is having this conversation with his father. And I'll just get to the page, if you just bear with me. And then he says to his dad, "I don't do anything." "What do you mean, son?" "Of course you do. Exactly that. Of course you do so much. Exactly that. I don't do anything. I don't make anything or add anything to the world. I make money, but I don't even make that, not really. I just perform a series of transactions that skims money off the productive economy, the bit that actually creates wealth." His father frowned. "I think you are being a little hard on yourself. I mean, I know the financial sector's got some bad press lately, but you didn't crash the economy. You are one of the people who helped to stabilize it." And then he says, "Listen, Dad, nothing I do is for the benefit of the wider economy. My job is to make money regardless. You can think of me as a parasite sucking resources from its host. I don't want the host to die, obviously, but that doesn't mean our interests are the same. I care about share prices, not economic health. When I see crisis in the world, I see how will this affect the shares and how can I make money and get higher returns." So, you know, somebody who thinks he's so intelligent, so bright, he's made it so good in life. And then this is the conversation that he's having with his father. He's totally despondent. There's despair. There is disappointment in his own life. And I think there's a lot of confusion in his mind. And he wishes he was someone else. And he goes to visit his dad, who is not in London. He's in a part of England where maybe people are not that well off. And he goes in his yellow Ferrari, and the father says, "Park it in the garage because it might embarrass my neighbors." And that was very touching, and from old values. And he says, "No, I can leave it here." And next morning, their children, who are, you know how young boys want to look at a Ferrari and they get all enamored. And when he comes out of the house, the two little boys, they say, "Oh, is that your car? Are you a football player? Because only football players can own Ferraris." And he says, And the answer is very interesting. What he says is, no, I'm not a football player. You know what I do for a living? I'm a cancer doctor, and I treat people, and I make them better, and I make them well. If you want to own a Ferrari, go become a doctor and treat people and help them. And I just thought at that moment, I know we don't like him, but yes, my heart, maybe I'm a hopeless romantic. My heart just sank and I said, oh, well, you know, you are forgiven.
All I could see, there's two little boys growing up to become doctors and finding that they're driving, they're going to be bitterly disappointed.
I can see a good message in this book. I mean, from person being, you know, with no emotions and doing and making money and making money, and suddenly he realized that, you know, he needs...
It is completely meaningless. That there is a good message in it. However, that there's also... I'm slightly conflicted because the message is there. It's just like, you're not a nice person. You've made all this money. Ultimately, what do you have? Absolutely nothing.
Yes.
Apart from cash.
From cash, yeah.
But he's also aware that he loses his firm an immense amount of money. Mm-hmm. So he has no job. Doesn't really matter. He gives a lot of money away to the people who work for him, the people that he's never acknowledged.
Yes.
So that he does that, that's good. But he's also aware that really what he's done is not going to help that much. And I think I was looking for something more from this book. I didn't want it to just be that he sort of gives the money away. He meets Caitlin, the girl who is the violinist, and she busks as well as playing in an orchestra. And they sort of come to a resolution at the end, although he's particularly not very nice to her. He sort of stalks her for half the book. And I just thought, I want something else to happen. I want there to be a twist at the end of it. But actually, there isn't. There is no twist. It's just sort of ends, as it were, with them being together. And I had completely forgotten about the Occupy movement, which also shocked me, because that was such big news in 2011-2012, and now it has just been so overtaken by other things that we forget that happens. But stay with us, we'll be back very soon to continue our discussion on the empathy problem.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading. From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
So on today's Talking of Books, our Book of the Week is The Empathy Problem by Gavin Extents. Got me Yvette, Hend, my co-host, and Tiki, and we've been having a look at what we think of Gabriel, the central character, who is a banker of the worst kind. And I would like to put in a word for the odd family member of mine that not all people who work in banks and banking are like Gabriel.
No, thank God for that.
They'll take the wrong message out of that.
So he is the stereotypical investment banker who wants to do nothing but make money. And the only thing that actually makes him change is being diagnosed with a brain tumour. And in fact, that, you know, it is a fact that a brain tumour can affect the way you think, the way you behave, and certainly the emotions, which is what happens to him. So he has some sort of enlightenment where he decides that, yes, he's not a particularly nice chap and he hasn't been very nice to people, and he tries to put that right by giving them money. And and it wouldn't have happened if he hadn't had that particular medical issue. So otherwise, I suspect he would have carried on through his life being not a particularly nice chap and not having any friends and literally buying everything he wants, whether it's a relationship, whether it's the flat, whether it's the person to clean it. And I'm sorry, I'm just not warming to him. But it does end up, you know, at the end. But as I was saying, what shocked me is realising that I had completely forgotten the Occupy movement, and that I'm guessing this book was published 2016, that when Gavin Extents was writing it, that would still have been uppermost in the public minds. And that was basically a group of people moved into St Paul's Churchyard, literally occupied it, and for a brief while the St Paul's Cathedral was closed, and yes. there were various things said by the odd person working with St Paul's Cathedral that were then said, no, that's not right, by those above him. So that is all factual. And he talks at the end, that the author talks at the end about which bits of that he may have actually exaggerated and elaborated on a little bit, but that basically that, you know, that happened, and eventually the protest was dispersed and the world moved on to other front page news. So in a way it's quite shocking that I thought, gosh, how can I have forgotten that? Because at the time it was very, very important. And any listeners who'd like to read a copy of The Empathy Problem, do message in 4001 with your name and tell us where St Paul's Cathedral, the one designed by Wren, mentioned in this book. In which city will you find St Paul's Cathedral? Let us know. Don't forget to tell us your name, 4001. So, okay, Tiggy, did you actually enjoy the book? Did you like it?
I liked the book. Good. I have to say, yes. I liked the book. I enjoyed the book very much. And I'm quite sure that, you know, if you pick this book up and you start reading, you will know at least one person who you'll be reminded of, that you know in life, who, you know,
someone like him.
Someone like him,
or someone who's maybe a, not actually that you know, but that you can think of, who's a public figure, who you think, yeah, that's that person.
Yes, and it's and that's what sort of, you know, makes you read a little bit more, and then you really can't not finish the book. I mean, I would not say it's a page turner and you'll be thinking about, oh, what's going to happen next, because it's quite predictable. Here there's somebody who's not going to make it through. He's going to probably just die very soon.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. But and again, I have to say, though, I did try to see the saving graces in him. Yes, he was not a very great person, because my husband was a banker. I discussed this book with him, and he was not happy with what he does in the end. He just walks into his office and he makes all these deals to bring down, he just depletes all the money and the fund. Oh. And he said, how can he be doing this with other people's money? He just takes his decision. Okay, today he doesn't like money anymore. He thinks it's evil, it's bad, and so let's get rid of it. And then he starts doing all these deals and things, and the company's making losses and everybody else is making losses. And so it's not just his money.
It's not his decision to take money from other people.
What he's done actually will have an immense impact on other people and a lot of ordinary people, in fact.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, he's in essence trying to bring down his company. He's making all those losses. But actually that has a knock-on effect. You can't just do that in isolation.
Yes. So, you know, I mean, so he just decided something. Yeah.
He didn't learn the lesson, I think.
No.
It goes back
to the fact that he has the brain tumour. He's not thinking logically.
The balance is not there.
And in fact, is he almost still thinking just about himself, which is what he's done for his whole life? He's given this money away. Yes, he's given it to the people he's worked for, that he's been horrid to. But why has he done that? Is it to appease his conscience? Is it because he actually cares about them? It's not really very clear in my mind what his eventual motives are. And I'm conflicted about him, and he's certainly very conflicted about his own motives and thoughts.
When I finished the book, it was not a very feel good book that you would put down and you'll feel good about it. Yeah, you might think about things and you might want to reflect on, as the previous book also, these are books that you read and then you reflect and you want to have some time to yourself and just think where one's life is going, definitely. But I wouldn't say that, you know, when I finished this book, it didn't make me feel good, or it did not make me feel happy about anything. It was sad, and what he did in the end was even sadder, and I wish he had not done this. So at least, you know, the book would have ended on a slightly more cheerful note, that okay, at least there was redemption.
Yes,
but then I didn't understand this whole concept of redemption when you go and do this to your company and to other people's money.
Other people's life.
That was yes. you know yes. so yeah so uh, I like the book. I would read it. I would say people, I mean, you know, if...
It's an enjoyable read.
It's an enjoyable
read. Ultimately, it's not a difficult read.
No,
and,
it's not, yeah.
And it certainly, it does get you thinking about motives, about people who live that sort of life where they feel money can buy, and indeed, so far as they're concerned, does buy them everything they want, until something happens that actually makes you stop. And obviously, in terms of healthcare, he's bought whatever he's needed in the past. But there's a particularly lovely bit where he has to go to the accident and emergency part of a National Health Service hospital, and he's somewhat stunned and to find that there is a waiting time that he's not seen straight away.
Yes.
And having spent some time myself sitting with various people, I do find it quite fascinating. If you're not actually seriously hurt or really yourself, to watch what's going on, gosh, it's such an entertainment and such an outlook on life. But he doesn't quite see it that way. So he thinks that by bribing the receptionist, he can actually get to the front of the queue, which doesn't quite work.
No, thank God for that.
Is the first time that actually he's within the book that he's discovered that money can't buy everything that he wants. It can't get him seen faster. If you go to accident and emergency, you wait your 2 hours, and he has a conversation about 2 hours from when. Two hours from when I arrived, or 2 hours from now. Yeah. I can only advise you that the wait time is 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the interesting thing is, when I finished reading this book, and I thought of at the literature festival, it was lovely to hear our Minister of Happiness. Mm-hmm. And I also heard the person from KHDS saying that they're going to incorporate it's not a syllabus, but it's like a course for children here in schools to have life skills and to understand the meaning of life and to enjoy life the way it's meant to be. And I think it's such a positive thing. And I was coming out of the DIFC, which is the financial district.
Absolutely. And that's another little world in itself.
Yes. And the street right there is called the Happiness
Street.
That's
right. They've renamed it, haven't they?
Yeah. And I looked at it and I said, it's really nice. You know, it just makes, when you see that the name Happiness Street, no matter what you are thinking, for a second you smile.
You do. And it's true. Correct. Because I was in the car and I just saw the and in fact, having I had the same thoughts, having read this book and having obviously been to Canary Wharf, where it's set, and the City of London, wandered around there, having been to DIFC, which for me always feels like I've been transported to a different place. And I always feel like that I shouldn't be here. This is not my world. Somebody's going to say, you're wearing the wrong clothes, leave now.
I know.
And it actually crossed my mind to think, could you rename it Happiness Wharf and not Canary Wharf?
Yes, you know, I just
does it make a difference to how you'd feel? I'm going to run that one past my members of my family who work there, and they will just look at me as if I am completely mad, as usual. No mother.
Yes, you know, it did bring that to my mind, and I said, here there are people who worked all day and they've just been, you know, in this cold environment of money and, you know, God knows what not, and you come out and then you see all
happiness.
Of a sudden,
I completely agree. It literally made me smile as I was sitting in the traffic jam.
Yes,
I saw it a lot. I read it a lot.
Yes, I think that's a good thing in today's world to just be happy.
Take stock, pause for the moment, and the empathy problem, which Gabrielle has no empathy, he's empathyless. And one of the things I will say about reading for children and adults, but children in particular, is that it builds empathy. And I just feel if somebody had given him the right books, if he'd had a really good school librarian or public librarian when he was a child, he'd be very different, and he'd have found that empathy that he is so lacking. So we've got hard copies of the book, we've got the real book in front of us. Mm-hmm. Do you read on an e-reader or anything particular? Do you prefer
books?
Real
no,
books?
It has to be my pages and my paper. In fact,
Even when you're traveling, you wouldn't take a
no.
Die hard,
absolutely
real book reader.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do go between the two. And I do find the ease of being able to get an e-book for me is brilliant, especially when I'm travelling. Hand, what about you? You read on both?
I'm still reading real books. Thinking of going to e-books sometimes when it's easier when travelling and all that. And
Because what I found, little news snippet, quite interesting, that sales of e-books are actually dropping. So consumer e-books dropped 17%. over the past year, and that's the lowest level since 2011. So
that's,
I think,
interesting.
It is interesting. So people are obviously going back to reading real books.
Yeah.
That the novelty has somewhat worn off. I still think for a bookshop, for choosing a book, there's nothing nicer than walking in and actually seeing them in front of you. You can't do that with an e-reader. You can get your page up, your Amazon page, or whatever, and you can flick through the covers. But it's not the same as having that incredible display. So I found that news quite heartening. And it also, print sales of consumer book titles, fiction, non-fiction and children's titles rose 9% last year. And I think those are UK figures, but I can't imagine that's that out of sync with the rest of the world. So that was my good news to counter Gabriel's lack of empathy and his love of money.
Much needed.
Yes, I think so. That's what I'm going to take away from this week. So stay with us and we'll be back to round up the show very, very soon.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading. From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And here on Talking of Books, we've had our normal mixture of materials to discuss this week. And we're finishing off with The Empathy Problem by Gavin Extence. And just a quick reminder, if you'd like to win a copy of the book and discover what it's like to be a top banker in London when you've got all those millions in your bank account and also in other people's bank accounts to play with, do message in and tell us, where is St Paul's Cathedral? Which city in the UK is it in? And it's the one designed by Christopher Wren. And if you can tell us which city St Paul's is in, and also don't forget to tell us your name. We need that, please. 4001, send us that SMS and we will put you into the draw straight away to win a copy of The Empathy Problem. So Tiki, huge thank you for coming in today, for taking the time to read the book and share your thoughts with us. And again, with your background in business management and economics, perfectly placed to talk about this book. And also with Gabriel's central character's lack of appreciation of the arts, it's good to know that you have that side of your character too, that you're a very well-rounded reviewer. not like Gabrielle. And Hend, thank you very much for all the Arab world news. And that's a regular slot that we're going to be introducing into the show. So do stay tuned every week to find out more about what else you can explore with your reading. And next week we've got me back, I think. I think I'm back on air. Hend will be back.
Sure.
And Hend will be talking about The President's Garden by Muhsin Al-Ramli, which has got incredibly good reviews.
Yes.
And is already translated into English. So I will be able to join in the conversation.
That's great.
Because as long as I can track a copy down. And I know it's got the most beautiful cover too. And that's what attracted me to it.
Yes.
Because I'm such a shallow person when it comes to books. And I do like a lovely cover. So we'll be discussing that for our Arab World Book of the Week
next week.
We've also got Curtis Sittenfeld Eligible, which will be our book of the week. We're going to have our young reviewer who has just been to at the top Burj Khalifa because he won a competition that was talking about, he had to describe his love of reading. So he will be on Abhishek and the experience of going to at the top and what books he loves reading. So that was a little treat for his school. And then we've also got Plated Heirlooms by Dima Sharif, and Dima will be in the studio.
That's
so
interesting,
we've got quite an array of
It's a very
books.
Interesting book, Dina's book.
Next week. Have you seen it? Nice. I haven't seen it. Do you have a copy?
It's Chrissy, I have a copy, yes.
I might have to steal that. Might have to just borrow that.
So it's
that
not
for
only about
bit.
Food, it's more about culture, food and, you know, her life and all that.
Sounds good, actually. So you're looking forward to that. So very different selection of books next week, actually. Nothing in common, whereas today we had a somewhat mix of depression and illnesses and medical things, apart from Longbow Girl. Then next week we're in for a bit of variety, so do make sure that you tune in next week, and we are going to just magically press the button and get the winners for our competitions this week, so we can share those with you. And don't forget, if you want to keep up to date with anything that we're doing at the Emirates Literature Foundation, and also news of what will be coming up for Emirates Airline Festive Literature, you can check our websites out, emiratesliterfest.com, elfdubai.org, and you can get all the information there. And do follow us on social media too. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, YouTube. Goodness me, there's a lot going on there, and you can track us down in Arabic and in English. So let's have a look. Let's see who has won today. Okay, so we had, what's the major component of air, was our first question. And of course the answer is nitrogen. So well done to Bobby. We'll be in touch to arrange for you to have a book from our signed collection lurking behind my desk just now. And I also said I'd be extremely generous and give an extra prize if anyone could tell me what percentage we were looking at for nitrogen, and it's 78%. And Jirim, you are the winner there, so we'll be in touch with you too. Does Wales have its own language? Yes, of course it does. Zoya, we will be making sure that you get a copy of a Litfest book too. And finally, Yvonne, in which city will you find St Paul's Cathedral? The one by Sir Christopher Wren. Yvonne was our winner there. So again, a Litfest book will be yours. So well done to all our winners this week. And thank you for listening in. Thank you for messaging us. And if you've ever got anything you want to share with us, please do. We are always very, very happy to hear your thoughts. So, Hend, what's your next book? What are you reading next?
What I'm reading next?
Yeah. What's on your pile?
I'm reading three books now.
Only three?
Books.
Oh. Lightweight.
Well, away from the festival books and the authors that I'm searching, I'm reading a book, very interesting book, a study about an old myths. Like, you know,
oh, brilliant.
Like, you know,
oh, excellent.
You know what people like to believe, like, yep. The woman that scares kids and how they scare in the cultures.
Excellent.
And in different cultures. A very, very interesting, scary some part of it.
To our children's book actually this week, yeah. Longbogo, which draws very heavily on Welsh myths and traditions.
And then he gives like different examples of from different cultures, even the Arab cultures, but different like countries, how they see it in each one. And he gives stories from that, the author, like what his mother used to tell him.
So is this in Arabic or in English?
It's in Arabic.
And who's it by?
It's something Al-Jaburi.
Okay.
He just, it's a study. And he said, because I hear a lot of stories, and because like we have a Sarlua, which is like a very like big woman. She scares kids if they don't eat or they don't wash or they don't that. And then these stories came also like when we were kids. And
exactly.
Then they tell us.
And also all around the world.
It's around the world,
not just
yes. Yeah. And it's also differences, as I say, like from Iraq to Lebanon and other places, how each one they have their own stories. Yeah.
Very good.
So
very
that's
good.
That's one of the books that is different. I wanted to be something way from the fictions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tiki, what's next on your reading pile?
Actually, I really haven't looked into it yet.
Wow. So you just finished this one.
Yeah, I've just finished this one, and I think I'll take something with a lighter mood, I think.
Yeah. I've gone back to my crime roots, so I've been reading two series actually, one by Peter May, the Enzo series, which is set in France, and then one by Ellie Griffiths, which is a forensic archaeologist, and that's set in Norfolk. So I've been alternating between those two, and two parts of the world
two
that I know well actually, so it's quite nice. I do like books that have a very strong sense of place, where the place is almost the character, which is why I like Longbow Girl so much. Because it just conjures up Wales very, very magically. So before I start on my books for next week, that's what I've been reading just now. But I'll be moving on to my Curtis Sittenfeld very soon. It's sitting on the dining table. I can ignore it no longer. So that's going to be my bedtime reading for the next week. And thank you very much, Tiki, for joining us today. It's
pleasure.
Been really good to have you. Very kind of you to come along. Hope you've enjoyed it. And
thoroughly.
We'll see you again soon, I'm sure. Hend, thank you for coming for the whole show. I know you weren't expecting to, but much appreciated.
No, thank you. I really enjoyed it. I hope I've done well.
I'll grade you later on. I'll give you a written report. We'll see whether you deserve a certificate with stars. But thank you. Otherwise, people would have got very fed up with the sound of my voice, I think. So hopefully John McDonald will be feeling better soon.
Hopefully.
And we'll be back next week. And hence, you're going to be a regular now.
Yes.
So that's just great. Yeah. Are we going to explore some Arabic children's fiction as well?
We will do that. Once a month a young adult or children book.
Perfect.
And my colleague Rania will come and also do some other like children or young adult books between me and her.
Great. Yeah. Yes. Well, thank you very much. And Elaine, huge thank you for looking after us and making sure that everything works properly in the studio. Our producer, Elaine, much appreciated. And we'll see you all.
This is Talking of Books here on Dubai Eye 103.8.